If you have a cell phone, you might want to turn it down. So my notes for number 16 through 19, I prepared, but I never presented. I won't go through all that again. So, number 16, verse 3, they assembled against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You have gone far enough." Moses gets upset. He says, "You come here tomorrow." Verse 12, and they say, "We will not come up." Then when they finally do come up, verse 19, they assemble against Moses and Aaron. Then verse 41, the next day all the congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. Chapter 17, verse 12, then the sons of Israel spoke to Moses, saying, "Behold, we perish, we are dying, we are all dying. Everyone who comes near the tabernacle of the Lord must die. Are we to perish completely?" When I read this account and anything from the book of Exodus all the way up through here, I think to myself, these people here, they're gluttons for punishment, we would say. Exodus 32. Exodus 17, they're grumbling. Exodus 16, they're grumbling. The question is, why in the world would God save them? What's the answer? These
promised Abraham.
Oh, okay. His own sake, the promise to Abraham. We could come up with a dozen or more different answers. The one answer that is not true is anything in them. Not a thing in them is worth saving. It's all by His grace. Thank God for His grace.
It reminds me of how we are. We're not saved by any merit of our own. No, by anything that we can't ever.
We can't say to God, "God, I'm here. Let me in." Not at all. Good point. Excellent. That is always the application. What about me? I find it interesting that the first noteworthy events of the nation of Israel, instead of being feats, great feats of faith, triumph of their love for God, instead is what? After what? After what? After what? But examples of bad faith. And overall, it'll only get what? Worse. It'll only get worse. As bad as it is now, it only gets worse, and it gets much worse, and much worse, and much worse. And yet, some people in the world, within Christendom, want what in the future? This nation to come back. When you put it that way, doesn't that doctrine sound a little strange, to say it nicely? Oh, they add to it, all right.
Yeah, they're all
going to
be cured.
Yep. It'll
many things to it.
Right. They want this nation of Israel. By the way, contrast this nation of Israel with, when you think of the New Testament, do a quick scan of the churches that you know about in the New Testament. There's one or two that stand out for being praiseworthy. Can you think of one? Anyone?
Quakers.
Say it again.
Quakers.
In the New Testament.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, the Church of Philadelphia. The church at, if you're going to stay in.
The church at Thessalonica was Paul and a lot of people say about
that. Yeah. The church in Smyrna also.
Antioch.
One church received a letter that said, "You guys are great." Other than Revelation. Who? The church in Ephesus did. The church in Philippi. If you think of, the church in Philippi, their letter's like fantastic, isn't it? In fact, so we have all these different people who are doing what they ought to do. They're the ones who are receiving this commendation, these letters of commendation. They're doing what they ought to do. So we have some on one hand want to bring this Israel back, when in fact the true Israel is can be right here and among them. In the church to, excuse me, the letter to Philippi, chapter 2, verse 14. Do all things without grumbling or disputing, so that you will prove yourselves to be blameless and innocent children above reproach in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world. This church here at Philippi gets this designation. Hey, you guys are doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're the lights of the world. That means, you know what they're doing? They're loving each other. They're actually doing what God wanted Israel to do. Some people want the old Israel to come back. I'd rather have the church at Philippi come back. Since I can't have that, I might as well try my best to be like the church in Philippi, right? Okay. I didn't bring my questions. I had them there, but I want to ask them. Do yours have the right answers? Okay. No, I don't. Oh. All right. I probably have it in email. Interesting. Forget it. Okay. Okay, so who did what? Well, I can't even read that anyway. Chapter 16, who did what? John Bosworth.
Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, and On, led a revolt against Moses and Aaron.
What did they charge against Moses and Aaron, Tanya? Are you... Okay, they didn't bring them to the land. That's part of it. Anybody? Yeah, John?
They exalted themselves above the assembly.
Right, yeah. What was their problem? Not Moses' and Aaron's, but what was their problem? Ethan?
They were not satisfied with the job that they had.
Yes. Anybody else? Anything else?
Greed,
envy, not satisfied, John?
Well, they wanted a greater role to increase themselves.
Okay. Right. What did the Lord threaten to do, and how did Moses and Aaron respond? Yeah, John Edward.
He said he would consume the congregation, and Moses and Aaron fell on their faces and asked him, all shall be punished for one.
Okay. What happened, and what was its purpose? John Moore, are you ready to go?
What happened? Well, this is where God was going to destroy them. Moses interceded. He told the people to get some censers.
Yes.
Actually, the 200 leaders to get censers. And the Korah, the other two, Dahum and whatever his name is, in the tents would not come up. So they went down there and they said to the, because the Lord was going to destroy them all, he said, Israel, separate yourselves from them. And he proved that Moses wasn't the one doing the punishing. He said that an earthquake would happen, swallow them all up, their own and their families, and that's what happened.
Excellent. Very good. Very thorough. I don't have to read it now. Okay, yes, you're right, John. Thank you very much.
It was the purpose to prove that God was in charge.
Right, okay. Very good. He said 200, how many died? 250 died so far, 250 or more. And what did they make with the censers and why? Marcy, are you? No, okay, back to John.
A covering for the altar as a reminder to Israel that no outsider, that is outside the descendants of Aaron, could burn incense to the Lord.
Okay, what happened and when? Ethan?
The people grumbled against Moses and Aaron the next day.
Tanya, who interceded this time? Number 5. First part. Oh, I'll answer. Gary answers Moses and Aaron. And how many more died? Anyone?
14,000.
Yeah, 14,700 more. Chapter 17, what proved Aaron's authority? And let's go to John Edward.
Aaron's rod sprouted and yielded the ripe almonds.
Yes, right. And why was Aaron's rod kept? John, now a short one this time. John Moore.
A sign against the rebels that they were complaining so the people wouldn't die.
Excellent. Jennifer, if you're up to it, who was dying and why?
Sons of Israel.
Okay. and because of their rebellion, right?
Yeah.
Okay, chapter 18. What was given to Aaron? Two answers. Let's go back to John.
I have a responsibility for the sanctuary.
Yeah.
And a responsibility for the priesthood.
Okay, right. Anybody else? Anything else?
His brothers, the Levites.
Yeah, the Levites also. The rest of them were given to him. Okay. What was given to the priests and the Levites? I'll just answer this one. Support. Okay, we'll just answer it that way for now. Everything or support, however you want. Okay. And what were the priests and Levites to give to the Lord? John Edward?
A tenth of the tithe.
Okay, right. Chapter 19, describe the heifer. John, Gary, you're a cow guy. Describe the heifer.
Red, without blemish. No defects, never been under a yoke or anything. This is a young heifer, obviously, without blemish of any kind.
Are you looking at her answers? Is this how you do it at home, too? For what was the water to be used? Get John, or Tanya. Tanya, for what was the water to be used? Nine, the second part of nine.
Tabernacle.
Okay. To cleanse.
Purification.
Yep. Okay. If a person did not purify himself, what did he defile? There you go, the tabernacle. And what happened to the person who did not purify himself, Ethan?
He was cut off from Israel.
Okay, we'll stop there. Thank you. I don't know what happened there. All right, so chapter 16. Verse 1, Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, and the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, and the sons of Reuben, took action. And they rose up before Moses, together with some of the sons of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, chosen in the assembly, men of renown. They assembled together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, "You have gone far enough, for all the congregation are holy, even every one of them. And the Lord is in their midst, so why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" When Moses heard this, he fell on his face. I assume that by now Moses has a very, very, very flat face. And he spoke to Korah and all his company, saying, "Tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near himself. Even the one whom he will choose, he will bring him near to himself. Do this. Take censers for yourselves, Korah, and all your company. Put fire in them. Lay incense upon them in the presence of the Lord tomorrow. And the man whom the Lord chooses shall be the one who is holy. You have gone far enough, you sons of Levi." So in other words, he's saying, okay, you want the job? Try it out for a day. We'll see what happens. At the same time, notice this. In verse 3, they had said, "Moses and Aaron, you've gone far enough." In verse 7, he says, "Sons of Korah, you've gone far enough." So we've got two fingers pointing back and forth at each other, both saying the same thing. Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi, is it not enough for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the rest of the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do service of the service of the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister to them? And that he has brought you near, Korah, and all your brothers, sons of Levi, with you? And are you seeking for the priesthood also? Therefore, you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. But as for Aaron, who is he that you grumble against him?" Moses sent a summons to Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and said to them, "We will not come up. Is it not enough that you have brought us up out of the land flowing with milk and honey, to have us die in the wilderness? But you would also lord it over us. Indeed, you have not brought us into the land flowing with milk and honey, nor have you given us an inheritance of the fields and the vineyards. Why do you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." Then Moses became very angry and said, "Lord, do not regard their offering. I have not taken a single donkey from them." We'll skip to verse 19. Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the doorway of the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, "Separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them instantly." But they fell on their faces and said, "O God, God of the spirits of all flesh, when one man sins, will you be angry with the entire congregation?" Then the Lord spoke to Moses and said, "Speak to the congregation, get back from around the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Then Moses arose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and with the elders of Israel following him, and spoke to the congregation, saying, Depart now from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing that belongs to them, or you will be swept away in all their sin. And they got back, so they got back from around the dwellings of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the doorway of their tents, along with their wives and their sons and their little ones. Moses said, By this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these deeds, for this is not my doing. If these men die the death of all men, or if they suffer the fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord brings out an entirely new thing, and the ground opens and its mouth and swallows them all up with all that is theirs, and they descend alive into the Sheol, then you will understand that these men have spurned the Lord. As he finished speaking all these words, the ground was opened underneath them. The ground that was under them split open. The earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up, their households, and all the men who belonged to Korah with their possessions, so that they and all that belonged to them went down alive to Sheol, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. All Israel who were around them fled at their outcry, for they said, The earth may swallow us up. Fire also came forth from the Lord and consumed 250 men who were offering the incense. And the Lord says, Get the censers and make them into a covering. Verse 40, as a reminder to the sons of Israel that no layman who is not of the descendants of Aaron should come near to burn incense before the Lord, so that he will not become like Korah and his company, just as the Lord had spoken to him through Moses. We'll stop there. Let me ask this question. You read this text right here that we just read, and you tell me what's one lesson, at least, that you walk away from here.
Do not question God's authority.
That's the one that I come up with. Do not, yeah. Gary emphasizes, do not ever question God. Question God's authority. You can ask God's questions, and you can ask in a way that he'll answer, but never ask like these people. Never question God's authority. That's, if there's no other lesson, we get that. Notice the reality was, they, when they questioned Moses, had questioned God himself. Verse 11, therefore you and all your company are gathered together against God. The issue was, they were not content. Verse 7, isn't it enough for you? Verse 9, is it not enough for you? Verse 10, you want the priesthood also? Verse 11, Verse 11, therefore you and all the company are gathered against the Lord. So, the issue was, first of all, the reality was they gathered against God. The issue was they were not content. With that in mind, can you think of a modern situation that is parallel? Anyone? I can think of at least three general situations. Women wanting to lead. Women wanting to lead. She didn't look, but that's my number one. There's another one that's close to it. Men wanting to lead. Which men and what position am I talking about? Some men who are not qualified want to be
elders.
And when they take that title and that role and that office to themselves, when they're not qualified, they're doing the same thing. Did they accuse Moses and Aaron of having exalted themselves? Which is not true. If you turn to Hebrews chapter 5, of course, that was the point of the story, or the point of the event, not the story so much, the event. Hebrews chapter 5, talking about Christ, is Christ really the high priest? That's the argument, but to prove that Christ is, he refers back to Aaron. Verse 4, Hebrews 5, 4, no one takes honor to himself, but receives it when he is called by God, even as Aaron was. So that was the situation back there. That's what God proved in Numbers 18, or 17, and 16, number one. At the same time, If a woman comes up and says, I want to preach next Sunday, why do you, we're all priests, by the way, we are all priests, aren't we? Even the women are priests, aren't they? 1 Peter chapter 9, or chapter 2. Right. So why do you call it, why do you exalt yourselves? Is it an issue of exalting ourselves?
No,
it better not be.
Right.
It could be, but assuming, it's not.
It goes back to God's authority.
Right, it goes right back to God's authority. Don't question it. The same with the elder, the man who was, hey, I want to be in that position. And in a rather loose way, who wanted to be first in a certain church? He always wants to be first. John writes about it in 3 John. Diotrephes. He wants to be first. He's trying to get authority when he isn't worthy of authority because of not only his attitude, but he's not quite there. He's taking authority to himself. There's no position like that. Did you notice back in chapter 16, Numbers 16, these men, verse 2, they were leaders of the congregation, chosen in the assembly, men of renown, and also, from verse 10, were already serving God. They were already in a position of privilege, and they wanted more. Be very careful.
The sons of Kohath probably had the greatest privilege within the tabernacle service.
Right.
They actually carried the most holy items.
Yep, the closer you were to that ark.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they wanted more.
Because Aaron was the son of Kohath.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean,
you know, Kohath was the son of... Was Aaron a son of Kohath?
Aaron was of the Kohath.
Right,
but
Kohath was the son of Aaron.
That,
no? I don't remember
now.
Aaron is.
Aaron is a
son of Kohath?
Aaron's a son of Kohath, but he's a grandson.
Okay,
so he's a descendant of Kohath.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, so they had the greater privilege. They had the greater privilege, and they wanted more. They weren't content with having enough already.
Korah is outside that line. He's also a grandson of Kohath, but not through Amram.
Okay.
So these guys are cousins.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're all family. They're all Levites.
Right. Well, no. Some of these guys that are mentioned here are not Levites.
All like Dathan
and Abiram.
Yeah, they're ones of Zebulun.
One's Reuben.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sons of Reuben. Right. Yeah, thank you for that. Good point.
They're kind of following Korah. Korah's kind of like
a
leader.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're right. He's labeled first. Okay. If you're a real preacher, you've said the following analogy, and I've never said it before, so before I die, I have to say it. I'm going to say it now. The point we're trying to make is that you need to be content with what you have. You probably heard the analogy or the illustration this way. There's a man who, he's poor, doesn't have anything, got to walk everywhere. Sees a guy ride by him with a bicycle. Says, oh, if I only had a bicycle, man, I'd be well off. Life would be all set. I'd be happy with a bicycle. Gets a bicycle, sees what? A moped. If only I had a moped. Gets a moped, sees a VW bug. Only I had a VW bug. On and on and on it goes. It doesn't matter what station. We can always want more. We can have a lot and want more. We can have a little and want more. It doesn't matter. We have to be content with what we have. Comments or questions on what we're talking about so far? Go ahead.
Okay. Somewhere in the New Testament, I can't remember where, but Paul says, with food and clothing, with such we shall be content.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's what we need to be.
Yeah, and with God in Hebrews. Ian.
You know, well, these guys they're not just, it seems like, wanting a bigger Cadillac. They want Moses' job, which is not quite the same thing as somebody.
They want a Lamborghini.
Wanting to be a preacher. I mean, you know, This is usurpation, and next to being open rebellion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, which is why they died. They also, yes, right, this is usurpation. No matter what they wanted, it would have been usurpation, and they should have been content. The general issue is, yeah, you're right here. You notice, I mentioned this earlier, chapter 16, verse 7, you've gone far enough. Chapter 16, verse 3, you've gone far enough. We've got two different people making the exact same claim about each other. What is the answer? Always. What does God say? That's always the answer. That's the answer right there. Okay, let God decide it. Now, having said that, nowadays, God's method of revelation may be less dramatic, but it is just as decisive, isn't it? Now, he's not going to drop open an earthquake in front of us for having a dispute about whatever we're disputing. It's his word. That's how he reveals to us his will now. But it's just, Jesus says in John chapter 5 that the word that I have spoken will judge them. This is it. You know, it's the same. If we're against his word, might as well be swallowed up by an earthquake. What if Moses had taken a single donkey, by the way? Remember he said, I didn't take a single donkey from them. What if he had? This is not a huge point, but it is. He brought it up.
I mean, was he worth taking a donkey? I mean, of course. I mean, it's like, you know, the preacher is you know, worthy of his, you know, like wages. Moses is, how much worthy is Moses?
Right. Could he have taken? If a preacher is worthy of his wages, then Moses is worthy of a donkey. Maybe just one donkey, right? Right. Well, and so what does this illustrate about them? The charge that they're bringing against them, about themselves?
No warrant at all.
Yes, there's no warrant. They are depraved, right, is what I say. I don't mean that in the total hereditary depravity. It emphasizes how baseless their accusation was at the same time his integrity.
Yeah, I think it's an example that he really has not abused his position at all.
Right.
And he was not a volunteer for this.
No.
He was a conscript.
Yep.
I mean, and he kind of fought it all the way, as a matter of fact. But he hasn't abused it once he's been there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, he has not abused. They have no reason to charge this against him. This emphasizes 1 Timothy chapter 3. I can't remember right now. But 1 Timothy chapter 3. An elder is supposed to live his life above reproach. And by the way, is that just for elders?
No,
it's for the person who will someday be an elder. It's for all Christians. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 7, I think. Yeah, he must have a good reputation with those outside the church so that he will not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Titus chapter 1, verse 7, my version says, an overseer must be above reproach. Our influence, if nothing else, it's because of the influence that we have. If somebody brings a charge against you, he can say, I've never done a thing, no less this thing that you're charging me with. Good things to remember. Any comments or questions? John.
A couple minutes ago, you said that you could think of at least three things that this whole thing, and we only got through two of them.
No. Women speaking, unqualified elders, and then Diotrephes.
Oh.
Three, yeah. Yeah. Why? Did you have something else? Number four? Okay.
Well, I was going to ask you about the PowerPoint if you had anything going at all. Because you were looking at your...
Yeah.
And,
no, I'm...
Don't worry about it.
Okay. So. Has it not been up there the whole time?
No.
Isn't that funny? Okay.
Yes, it has not been up there.
Thank you. Right. Okay, so... Chapter 16, verse 41. On the next day, all the congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, saying, you are the ones who have caused the death of the Lord's people. It came about, however, when the congregation had assembled against Moses and Aaron, that they turned toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Then Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting, And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, get away from among this congregation, that I may consume them instantly. And they fell on their faces. Moses said to Aaron, take your censer, put it in the fire from the altar, lay incense on it, then bring it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them, for the wrath has gone forth from the Lord, and the plague has begun. He runs out there. Verse 49, but those who died by the plague were 14,700 people. So he didn't get out there very fast, but he got out there. Verse 50, Aaron returned to Moses at the doorway of the tent of meeting, for the plague had been checked. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the sons of Israel, get from them a rod for each of the father's households, 12 rods from all their leaders according to their father's households. You shall write each name on his rod. You read the text before you came. The idea is, look, you're questioning whether or not Aaron is my servant. I'm going to prove it to you right now. And he takes a rod that's not attached to the ground, and the next morning is a fruit tree. And that proves, miraculously, that Aaron was his choice. So they keep it, verse 10, put back the rod of Aaron before the testimony to be kept as a sign against the rebels, that you may put an end to their grumblings against me so they will not die. Moses did just as the Lord had commanded, so he did. Then the sons of Israel spoke to Moses, saying, behold, we perish, we are dying, we are all dying. Everyone who comes near to the tabernacle of the Lord must die. Are we to perish completely? What's the answer?
Yes. You're behind for 40 years, so you're all dead.
Okay. But what would have eliminated this problem? Yeah, just stop being silly. Stop doing these silly things. It's completely up to you. Notice, I write here that God is very, very clear. He had signs. You want to question Moses? Here, I got a sign for you. Earthquake. You want to question Aaron? Who else you got to question? I can come up with signs all day long to demonstrate I've chosen these people. God is very clear about his choices. About the elders. Must be the husband of one wife. You can't not be single and be an elder. It's God's law prohibits it. He states that how many times? Not once, but twice. Women are not to lead in the assembly. God is very clear about his choices. At the same time, be patient. God's people, being people, are a stubborn people. A couple things emphasize this. The next day. The next day, you're the ones who have caused the deaths. They didn't get the message. They missed it. It was on their desk right in front of them, and they just didn't get it. The very next day. And then they said, we're all perishing. We're all dying. They're not putting together sin causes death. We keep on messing up, and that's why we're here. Sin causes death, and they weren't getting it. Two things about this. Expect it. Paul writes to the church in Corinth that I'd like to write to you as spiritual men, but I can't because you are fleshly. The writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 5, I'd like to write more things to you, but I can't because you can't swallow milk. Both texts that I just quoted from said you can't handle meat, you can only handle milk. Although you should be able to handle meat by now. So expect it. Number two, be patient, because there's a little bit of stubbornness in me too, huh? Just a little bit. Some might say, roll their eyes at that. But you get the point. Comments or questions here?
I think it's also an example here where they are, when the whole congregation comes out the very next day, it's a matter of substituting their own judgment for God's judgment.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, that's unfair.
Right.
It may look like it's unfair by a human standard, but God's
don't question God.
God,
yeah.
God being very fair.
Yeah. You let you live that long.
Yeah. And you only killed almost
right.
80,000.
Yeah.
Also, they were complaining against Moses and Aaron. But later on, God says you're complaining against me, the Lord.
So right.
We have to be very careful when we're complaining. Because guess what? It's ultimately going to be against the Lord.
Yeah. Everything we have is from God. Everything we don't have is because God didn't give it to us. So when we complain about whatever it is we have or don't have, we're complaining right against God. Choose wisely. If Moses and Aaron had granted Korah's request, the final outcome would have been everyone's demise. Korah and everybody else, and Moses and Aaron too. So Moses and Aaron had an option. They could acquiesce. They could just say, okay, go ahead, take some censers, and we'll... Yeah, come on in and join. You're right. You've made a good point. I like what you've made. And let everyone be judged or admonish, and to the best of their ability, because they can't control other people, enforce the law of God. That's the choice that they had. What are you going to choose? One's politically correct, isn't it? But the other one's going to save your soul. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2 says, preach the word when? In season and out of season. You just keep on preaching. You're a robot. That's all you just keep on saying those words. Elders who rule, they're looking out for our souls. They'd be in the same situation. What are they going to do? Are they just going to let, oh, yeah, come on and join us? Or say, no, you know, this is God's word. Another point to make from this is, okay, they had been complaining against Aaron. It's all through there that they're complaining against. They're rising up against Moses and Aaron. And this final demonstration, this final miraculous demonstration is to prove, look, Aaron is my chosen servant. So they're complaining against Aaron. But yet, what does Aaron do for the ones who are just against him? He runs out. He runs out. I would say this. He didn't take their sin against him, what? He didn't take it personally. He didn't take it personally. How? How do you develop that? Because it's difficult.
Yeah, him and Moses, many times, prayed for people there, fall on their faces. Every time falling on their faces, they were just falling on their faces. There they are. They're Moses' face. What's he afraid of? What character Moses had.
Yeah. And Aaron here.
In the position Moses had. You know, walks around in the tent. You know, I have to kind of get the idea that Moses said, get rid of your tent, because fire is going to come down from heaven and consume them. Fire would have come down from heaven?
Probably.
Moses said, get back, because the earth's going to fall. And it did. Moses says, Aaron, take the censer, stop the plague. And it did. In the position Moses had. I mean, if nothing else, realize the position Moses is in.
Yeah, and respect him.
Yeah. You know, and you can attribute that to Christ.
Oh, yeah.
The position of Christ is his. He's
very important. You don't see him lose his humble nature, though.
No, no.
And I think you ask what develops that. I think part of it is the recognition of your own shortcomings.
Yeah.
And, you know, a realistic look at what those things are. It's the there but for the grace of God kind of go I.
Right. John, if you're not hearing him, he's saying, you look at yourself and say, you know what? There's a little bit of him in me, isn't there? This rebellious attitude that they all had when they're accusing Moses and Aaron, they're in their faces saying, you're the one. How do you not take it personally? Well, you realize, hey, you know what? To some degree, I'm just like them. To some degree, I am. In fact, 2 Corinthians 4, verse 4. Verse 3. Even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, in whose case the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelieving. That is the issue. And I'm not saying it's direct. It's indirect. Forget about the means. But the point is God has, excuse me, the God of this world, Satan, has blinded us all a little bit. Look in chapter 11, verse 3. I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, your minds will be led astray from the simplicity and purity of devotion of Christ. Your mind has been led astray. That is always the problem. Somebody's mind has been led astray. They've got mind problems. That's the problem. I have mind problems too. How not take it personally? A few weeks ago, I threw up on the board that apples retain a high amount of what?
Pesticides,
thank you. Pesticides. And the scientific research is that you give somebody an apple that's got a lot of pesticides, what do? They get in a grumpy mood. So you give a little kid an apple and say, here, go eat the apple, and then they come back and they act ugly towards you. Do you take it personally? No. You know, his body's a little messed up right there, or her body is. It's the same thing here. Our minds have been led astray. We've got mind problems. All of us have mind problems. I have often tried to describe to other people when I'm asked this question, how do you not take it personally? First of all, it's difficult, right? But if you can think of people as numbers, here's a number that has been infected by Satan, and we've got to get the infection out. They're just infected. We're all infected a little bit. This infection happened to manifest itself against me. That's the way I handle it. Maybe you have a better way. Aaron didn't take it personally. He had the right perspective, as John was saying earlier. Any comments or questions?
That could be why God chose Moses and Aaron in the first place, because he knew, but nevertheless, he knew that come what may, they would behave as professionals.
Yeah. Act as professionals?
Professionals.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, he knew them.
Doing their job.
Yeah. Good point. Okay, so they've questioned, and it's been demonstrated, don't question my choices. Yes, Aaron is my choice. Chapter 18, having demonstrated in chapter 17, Aaron's my choice, chapter 18, and you're going to give him his support also for some of them. You read the text, so I'm not even going to get into it. But if you look in verse 9, this shall be yours from the most of the holy gift reserves from the fire, every offering of theirs, even every grain offering, every sin offering, and so on. So when they brought offerings, most of the time they were given right to the priest, not a whole burnt offering. Verse 21, the sons of Levi, behold, I have been given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance in return for their service which they performed, the service of the tent of meeting. So the tithe which Israel gave every year went to them for their support, and they would tithe to the Lord for the operation of the tabernacle. Chapter 19, the purification water. I'll read the first 10 verses. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, this is the statute of the law which the Lord has commanded, saying, speak to the sons of Israel that they bring you an unblemished red heifer in which is no defect, on which a yoke has never been placed, and you shall give it to Eleazar the priest, and it shall be brought outside the camp and be slaughtered in his presence. Next, Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood with his finger, and sprinkle some of its blood toward the front of the tent of the meeting 7 times. Then the heifer shall be burned in his sight. Its hide and its flesh and its blood and its refuse shall be burned. The priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet material and cast it into the midst of the burning heifer. The priest shall then wash his clothes, bathe his body in water, and afterward come into the camp. But the priest shall be unclean until evening. The one who burns it shall also wash his clothes in water and bathe his body in water, and shall be unclean until evening. Now a man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer and deposit them outside the camp in a clean place, and the congregation of the sons of Israel shall keep it as water to remove impurity. It is purification from sin. The one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes, be unclean until evening, and it shall be a perpetual statute of the sons of Israel and to the alien who sojourns among them. Essentially, it is, if you touch a dead corpse, you've got to wash in this. You've got to come in contact with this water here. Quick question for you. The last question was, what was the last question? Yeah, cleansed by water. Remind you of anything? And the answer is? Okay, so I asked the next question, what's the point? And really, that's what is Lee thinking here? Okay, what's the point?
I referenced Hebrews 10:1.
Okay.
Which, let me get there. I guess talking about that being presents the law has but a shadow of the good things to come instead of the true form of these realities. It can never, by the same sacrifices that are continually offered every year, make perfect those who draw near.
Okay. It is a shadow, which means it's not anything new. People think when you come to the New Testament, there's suddenly baptism. Baptism, washing with water. Let's exchange this word baptism with, there's suddenly washing with water. Guess what? It's been around for 1,400 years and more, really. So it's not anything new. And get this. This is, you can't, Leviticus 15. Just look at the highlighted words. Bathe, 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 bathe. 10 times up there. This isn't even the word wash. This is just the word bathe in one chapter of the Old Testament. Now, I did pick out the chapter with the most words, bathe. Most times, bathe is used in one chapter. But you get the point. It's not anything new. And here's the deal. People get it. John Bosworth has the ESV study Bible today. And you do too, right? Do you have the truncated one? Okay, so it looks small. That's why I asked that. Okay, so this guy, Thomas Schreiner, I'm going to pronounce his name that way, is the New Testament editor for the ESV Study Bible. Now, the ESV is a version. The Study Bible is all the stuff added that man has written, okay? Ethan and John both have the Study Bible, I believe, right now. Okay, this guy is the New Testament editor for it. You'll find it on the first six pages or whatever it is. He writes on Romans 6. Let's turn to Romans 6 and read it. Romans 6. What shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin so that grace may increase? May it never be. Shall we sin is the general question. No. How shall we who died to sin still live in it? That's the question. Well, when did I die to sin? Or do you not know that all of us who have been baptized into Christ Jesus have been baptized into his death? You see the connection between baptism, water immersion, and removal of sin and death? Therefore, we have been buried with him and through baptism into death, so that as Christ was raised from the dead through the glory of the Father, so we too might walk in newness of life. Don't sin, because you've gotten rid of your sin. When? When you were baptized. Look what he writes. Romans 6 teaches that those who belong to Jesus share in his victory over sin. Amen. Verses 3 through 6 clarify that we died to sin by being baptized into Christ. For when we were baptized into him, we were crucified together with Christ. The "we died" in verse 2 therefore denotes our once-for-all death at sin at our conversion. When we died with Christ, the power of sin was broken decisively for us. Amen. He's a Baptist. Did you notice a key word, at least one? There's a dozen key words in there. At our conversion. What happened? What is he talking about? He's talking about baptism. I didn't misunderstand this. In an interview, we believe that Christian baptism is immersion in water of a believer into the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, to show forth in solemn and beautiful emblem our faith in the crucified, buried, and risen Savior, with its effect in our death to sin and resurrection to a new life. Its effect, baptism's effect, is our death to sin and resurrection in a new life. This guy's a Baptist. Something's got to give. Because what don't typically Baptists believe about baptism? They believe in immersion. He already said that. Immersion with water. The purpose. He'll go on to say, baptism is important in the New Testament with the saving events of Christ's death and resurrection. It is the initiation rite into the Christian church, and hence it is not optional or insignificant. I don't believe that baptism in and of itself saves, and somebody may be a Christian and not undergo baptism because he or she misunderstands what Christ requires. So now you have somebody that is converted, but not a Christian. It doesn't. He's inconsistent. He's got to give somewhere. It's got to give somewhere. But the point is they get it. The issue is, it doesn't match their theology. It's not hard to see. There it is. Romans 6 is one of the clearer places.
Even in his last thing, it says, it is the initiation rite into the Christian church.
That's right.
And hence is not optional, it's insignificant. Then he contradicts himself in the next sentence. I don't believe that it in itself saves. It's like...
Yeah, you can be a Christian but not converted. You know, it's...
No,
it's
he
a,
says he doesn't believe that you can be a Christian if you're not baptized.
I don't believe that baptism in and of itself saves. Someone may be a Christian and not undergo baptism.
And that someone may be a Christian. I believe nothing. The and means I believe neither.
Excuse me?
It seems to me that the and, I don't believe that baptism in and of itself saves. And I don't believe someone may be a Christian and not undergo baptism because they refuse to understand the right to inquire. English is a very complicated language, and I'm not even sure that I'm right, but I think that.
Okay.
And leaves out the...
Which and? This one?
No, the one before someone.
You say that.
I don't believe one thing, and I don't believe the other. If he had wanted to reverse his position in the second half,
okay.
Out.
I'll send you the document.
I'll
send you the document, and you'll understand that I have not taken that out of context. Okay, and it's right. He doesn't believe that you need to be baptized to be saved. That's the short of it. I'll send you the document,
okay.
Or give it to you, because I don't have your email. Yeah, you're right. Though English is complicated, but what's more complicated is man's doctrine. Which is, by the way, how do they play with it? With language. Anybody else? Anything else on this? John?
Just a key thing just on this.
Sorry?
Right with God's word, usually edit the word but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, when you say the
left. Oh, I wrote this but. I wrote the but.
Okay. But that's, I mean, he's still good at. In his head, he put but.
Yeah. Okay. We're talking about the red heifer. Anybody know anything about a red heifer right now? What's going on with red heifers? You know what I'm talking about?
In general, yes. But supposedly, Israel will be restored when a red heifer or something along those
lines. Yeah, right. Not when a red heifer. They're waiting for Jesus. They needed a red heifer. They needed a red heifer. For, by the way, this is PBS. Forts. Ah! Okay.
I don't understand what you mean. They need a red heifer. I got lots of red heifers.
Yours aren't perfect, I don't think. Not one white hair.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that.
Okay. Forcing the end. Why do a Pentecostal cattle breeder, note well, from Mississippi and an Orthodox rabbi from Jerusalem believe that red heifer can bring change? Because three things are needed. Jerusalem, oh.
These prophecies require three great events.
Jerusalem must be rebuilt, the temple, the center of the sacrifice, which was last destroyed by the Romans, must be rebuilt, and the nation of Israel must be restored, which is already done, right? 1947. Jerusalem is rebuilt. So the only thing that needs to be done now is we're waiting for the temple to be rebuilt. Okay? But even if the temple is rebuilt, guess what they still need? A red heifer, which Israel didn't have until around 2003.
Why do they need the red heifer?
Well, you just read it. Numbers 16. Numbers 19. Because it's for cleansing. Okay? For purification. For purification. So you need a red heifer. They need a red heifer. So this guy down in Texas, this man named Lot, he's reading his Bible. He realized that the second coming and the fate of humankind now depended on the red heifer. In order for the Jews to rebuild the temple and prepare the way for the return of the Messiah, they must be purified with the ashes of a red heifer. So he sold them 500 at $2,000 a pop, made $1 million. Coincidentally.
Of course.
And is in partnership with this other guy who, just in case Lot is raptured, he will become the sole proprietor of the entire business. Convenient for everyone. Okay. So, these guys think that Israel is going to come back. The Lord is going to set up a kingdom in Jerusalem. And the temple will be rebuilt. And what else from this? The old system is going to be restored. Now, I circled this one thing. They're going to be purified how?
Not with blood. blood of Christ.
Not with the blood of Christ. Oops. That's a problem. That's not just a small problem.
And I refer back to Hebrews 10 again. It is a shadow of things to come.
Right.
The things that are fulfilled, once the things that are coming are there, the shadows are don't need to be there anymore. So the shadows...
Right. The blood of bulls and goats doesn't cleanse anything. Jesus' blood will cleanse your conscience. Right. So here's... If you're to refute this red heifer doctrine, or whatever you want to call it, if they're going to be purified with the ashes of a red heifer, then Jesus didn't need to die for them, or Jesus didn't die for them. Or Jesus' blood isn't good enough for them, or something. Because what cleanses us from sin? Jesus' blood. So we don't need this. Now, that is... Let me do this real quick. Let me say this. We're going to start talking about this stuff more because we're going to go into it, okay? So here's something else. I didn't read this. Most fundamentalists assume that we are living on the edge of human history, in any case, that modern events in the Middle East are fulfillments of the prophecies made some 2,000 years ago by Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Isaiah, and John. How are you going to refute that in 45 minutes? You're not. So what do? One at a time. One at a time. That's the only thing you can do. Because you've got to study all of Jeremiah, all of Ezekiel, all of Isaiah, and all of John, and you know all the rest of the Bible. And it is a huge, complex system. So, that's why... How would you refute this? Look, it's either the blood of a red heifer, or the ashes of a red heifer, or it's Jesus' blood. Which is it? It's Jesus' blood, so clearly it's not the ashes of a red heifer. Now, you do that every time, and then you've got to go back and say, there are passages in the New Testament that say what about the kingdom?
It's not of this world.
It's not of this world, and it's already... It's already here. It's already here. Colossians 1:13, other places. Okay? So you've got to go and say, hey, Colossians 1:13 in other places, whatever you want to do. And then you've got to go back and refute every other, you know, every time something comes up, refute it. Every time it comes up, refute it. And it'll take a long time to go through the entire system, refuting it one by one. That's why you always want to remember Isaiah 2. Anybody? And Acts 2. Remember those four. Because all the ones in the Old Testament are about Isaiah 2, Joel 2, and Daniel 2. They're all talking about the same thing. And they all use this word mountain. And Joel says in the last days it's all going to happen. And you go to Acts 2 and there it is. And by Colossians 1:13 we're all transferred into his kingdom. So remember those four and a couple other things. And by the way, I have this little piece of paper that if we had more time I would have given to you. Let me just say this. It's the very short of it all. If they understood that the kingdom promised to David was also figurative, which is what John said, and it is here, and they did not add, which is what they do, they'd be all right. It's very, very simple. There's a lot of it. If you're interested in keeping this as a theory in your head, please take the piece of paper. It'll be right there. Thanks for your work.